Well, you've heard me talk about this on my site for quite a while now. I've been following this one website called Golden Age of Gaia. And I just like to, you know, I like to look at everything and keep an open mind to all possibilities. And so much of what I read on this site rings true in my heart. And, you know, I've learned things many, many, many years ago, and they've rung true to me and had my own experiences. And so I thought, well, maybe if I write the individual that controls this site, Steve Becco, maybe he'll come on my show. I don't know why I didn't think of this sooner. So I thought, okay, I sent him an email, and he was very gracious, and he got back to me, and he said he'd be willing to come on. So here he is. Steve Becco is with me, and he's over in Vancouver. That's where he is living right now. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great, TJ, and thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's a joy to have you here. I'm glad that you agreed to do this. You seem like a very down-to-earth guy. Matter of fact, I'm not going to go into great detail, but I didn't even really know Steve, and he made me a very generous offer. And it just shows to me, I think this is a man that truly, maybe it's all a hoax, I don't know, but I'm just saying, he seemed like a very generous human being, a very loving, gentle soul. So how long have you been on this journey? When did you have an awakening to do what you do?
Whoa, awakening to do what I do. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Well, I'd have to date that in 1987, TJ, when I had a vision of the total journey of a single soul from God to God, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like watching a movie. And by the way, I was driving my car when this happened.
Wow.
And my car just disappeared from my vision, and I had no more recollection that I was behind the wheel of a car.
Wow.
And so, yeah. So I saw the birth of a soul. I saw a huge golden sun, because there's so much bliss attached to this experience, I knew that to be the Father, God the Father. And out of it came a small golden star, and I knew that intuitively to be God the Child. God the Son is not that an appropriate phrase, but God the Child, Christ, Atman, whatever you want to call it. And I watched it progress into the Mother's domain, the Holy Spirit, and go through lifetimes in matter, have an enlightenment experience, like the light flashed on, and then it zoomed back to the big golden sun and immersed itself in it. And it was like, holy mackerel, you know, because I'd been studying enlightenment for about 10 years before that, and this answered all my questions. You know, it answered questions about the levels of enlightenment, the relationship between the God the Father and God the Mother, so to speak. And that I'd mark as the turning point when I started to march forward rather quickly.
That was also the same year as what people would say was the harmonic convergence. Is that, do you think there's any?
Yes.
Is that any coincidence in that, you think?
I wasn't even aware of the harmonic convergence. I can't say because my experience was individual, and it didn't at the time result in any, you know, it didn't have an impact on anybody else. But that after that, I started to study enlightenment really seriously, and the website From Darkness Unto Light that's connected to the Golden Age of Gaia, that's the result of all that study. The site itself came about in 2008, August 29th, as a matter of fact. A friend of mine, we were traveling down to Bellingham below the border, and he made me aware of ascension. Until that point, I hadn't heard a thing about it. I didn't know anything about it. And so I said, well, I'll do what I usually do with this kind of thing. I'll build a website, and I'll explore this. And so that website, let's see if I'm correct. I think that was the Essays of Brother Anonymous. It was a sub-feature of that particular website, which is still around, still up. And then it morphed into a discussion group, which is now called Share 11, Share the Truth. And then I got sick. and could no longer moderate the discussion group. And so folks said, well, why don't you open up a blog? If you're going to be sick, you can still research and study. And so that was the birth of the 2012 scenario. And that ran till the end of 2012, and then it became the Golden Age of Gaia. And that name, Stephen Cook contributed that name, Australian broadcaster. So that's how it started.
And anybody that has not gone there, you have just a variety. I guess that's what I like about it. Because a lot of times you go to a website and it's just one person channeling somebody. Or, you know, maybe psychic, some kind of one psychic. And it's, I think it's good, for me at least, it's good to have many different viewpoints. So I can kind of, you know, it's too easy for one person to say, well, I am God and you must follow me and only I have the answer. And so, you know, that's what I like about your site is that you have so many different people are channeling Archangel Michael, Gabriel. They're channeling Matthew Ward, who was a teenager. We've talked about it before the interview, but he's a really cool guy to listen to and a very enlightened being. And then there's just a countless others. Divine Mother, I think.
The Arcturian group.
Yeah, you have the, there's a lot of alien interaction, and it's the Arcturians a lot of times that come through. Who are the Arcturians, by the way?
Well, I think the Arcturians who are around us are fifth and sixth up to ninth dimension, but the planet itself is on higher dimensions as well. The Arcturians are specialists, I'd say, in ascension. Now, there are other planets like Trelawna, for instance, that are specialists in healing, and so it goes. There are other groups that are specialists in creating either planets or other kinds of environments. For instance, Matthew Ward designs astral worlds, which he calls Nirvana, but he's a specialist in designing an astral world. So, you know, everybody on the other side or in the higher dimensions, they all have their work, they all have their specialties, and it goes right up to planets having their specialties. I'm not sure what our specialty is. Maybe war.
We're good at that pretty much, right?
Boy, we sure got that nailed down. Eh?
Yeah.
So, go ahead. Yeah.
It was just, it's just good to get all these different inputs. And sometimes maybe there's a slight difference in each one of them, what they say. But I'm glad to see that that's allowed, that they don't all maybe agree with each other. And then also, you and I were talking about in a pre-interview about Blossom Goodchild, and she's one of many, more than one person that channels these Arcturians. And the Arcturians keep saying disclosure's coming and all these things are coming and all these things are changing. And she's sitting there in the one article that I read, which I thought was really good, and she's going, I don't know if I believe you anymore. Something to that effect. Like, because when is this going to happen? When? It's like, you keep telling me all this stuff. So it's good to see what I think is a real reaction that people have. Because you go to some sites and they paint it in such a vanilla way. Oh, it's all wonderful and it's all... And it's like, I think there's a lot of people that are doubting because they hear some amazing things that are coming forward. It's natural maybe for us to have that, a little bit of that. Don't you think, Steve?
Well, yeah. Also, you know, you just think of a situation where we're fighting a world war, right? It was 80 to 90% waiting. If you look at the history of the Second World War, for instance, you have the Battle of Stalingrad, say, and the Battle of Kursk, and the next battle might be 6 months away. And all that time, the troops were waiting. Well, we're in the same position. We're having an outbreak of peace on the planet, but it's taking time. It's global. It depends on other things. It depends on a lot of things. Mostly, it depends on human free will. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you that, if you're trying to plan something, I mean, if you were fighting a war, you wouldn't care about the soldier's free will. But when you're ascending a planet, the other side can't do a lot of things if we don't give them permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that all the the fact that it's global, the fact that it involves free will, the fact that the cabal are fighting us tooth and nail, all these things are what are resulting in delays. And of course, this ascension, too, we have to keep in mind, is brand new from and is going to trigger a lot of other ascensions in the universe. It's never been a mass event in the past. Well, that's not true. That's not quite true. Let me reframe that. It's never been a mass physical ascension in the past. It's the first time it's happened. And there are a couple of other factors which I'd have to look up, which I can't bring to mind. I should mention that I haven't had a functioning short-term memory since 2011. Hmm. So I've always dreaded interviews just for this right. particular reason. Like, oh, and what was that piece of information?
And part of the reason for that, would you say, Steve, is that because you're kind of walking in more than one dimension?
Yes. Yeah. Well, two factors. One, walking in more than one dimension, yes. But also, they don't want me, Archangel Michael doesn't want me to anchor my attention in the third. So they, in effect, took away that easy.
I guess what I'm saying is that maybe other people that find, because I find this happening to me too. Things that I should know are, I'm thinking, am I getting dementia? Because I know this. I work with these people, and I can't even think of their name. And it's like,
I know, it's awful.
And then my brain is sharp as a tack other times. I can remember things from a long, long time ago. So is it that shift that's affecting all of us then?
Yeah, it is. I guess the only difference between me and all the other people around me who have the same condition is that I was interviewing archangels and that, and on the radio, and you know, I'm a little bit more exposed than other people. You're in the same position, so it was daunting. But to come back to the blog for a sec, because the really interesting part hasn't happened yet. I've started this blog, and we're reporting on disclosure and ascension and accountability, and I didn't know about abundance right at that point, but in 2010, December, I had a lucid dream in which I saw a woman about 200 yards from me, and the minute I saw her, I erupted in love, and we ran towards each other, and two people could have merged right there, we would have, and then I woke up, and I said, "Who is that?" Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the same friend who introduced me to Ascension itself was having readings from a medium. And of course, I've been studying mediumship since 1975. And so I rang her up, Linda Dillon, and I said, "I've just had a lucid dream and I need a reading." And so the woman in the dream came on to the reading. Her name is Anna Starr, and she's my twin flame. And and she was the one who told me what was about to come down the pike, right? Mm. And I was blown away. You know, I didn't know anything about all the things that she was saying. And then I had another reading, and what happens then, Linda said, "There's somebody who wants to speak to you." Well, it was Archangel Michael. So that was January of 2011. And that began the relationship between me, Linda, and Michael, excuse me, that resulted in the radio program, An Hour with an Angel, that took the blog in an entirely new direction. And that conversation has continued ever since. I have probably about 1,800 pages of readings, which I boiled down to about 200 pages. And, you know, with his guidance kind of precipitated out. And my life has not been the same since.
So let me ask you, because I'm sure you faced this like I did. Was there ever a time when you felt, is this for real? Are these people that are channeling, do you ever have any doubts with that, maybe when you first started? And then were things maybe proved to you in some way that it was accurate?
Yes. They were proved to me in some way. They were accurate. I'll give you one example. So yes, I have had moments of doubt, and I've expressed them to Michael and gotten mad and said, "You said this would happen then, and it didn't. And you said it would happen then, and it didn't. And you know what the heck's going on?" In terms of proof, I had to leave an apartment. I didn't have to leave an apartment building, but if I didn't leave right away, then I'd have to pay another month's rent, right? So I wanted to get out of this apartment in the current month. I had 2 days to do it in, right? And I went to the place in Vancouver that I loved the most, and I was with a friend. We had been sharing an apartment, and I pointed to the building, which I said was my favorite building, and we went over there. Now, I could tell you a series of coincidences from then on that you couldn't deny that somebody was opening the doors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing that so coming out of the apartment was a couple, and we said, "Are there any places for rent?" They said, "Well, ours is for rent." And that turned out to be the apartment that my person I was sharing the apartment with, she took that one. I phoned up the manager, said, "You got another one?" He said, "Yeah, two floors above." And I said, "I'll take it." I didn't even look at it. And then we had to get past the barrier of them phoning the old tenants, the old manager. Now, the old manager had made it difficult for us to be there because my partner kept violating the rule against going out and smoking a cigarette in the balcony, right? And so if they phoned her, chances are she'd say, "Oh, no, don't rent to that guy." But her husband answered the call, and he said, "She's sick." And my rental manager said, "Could I call her back tomorrow?" And he said, "F-O, right?"
Oh.
And she was aghast, and she said, "Thank you very much," and she hung up. And she called me and said, "Well, I phoned them to get a reference, and he told me to F-O." And I said, "Well, what more do you want from me?" What more can be said?
You just bit your tongue that whole time, right?
That's right. Hallelujah. And later I was talking to Michael. I said, "What did you do?" And he said, "Well, the man was very aggressive. So I just helped him along."
And so you got this apartment, which I'm guessing is that the one you're still in now to this day?
Oh, yes.
And it's
lovely.
It's the right spot for you. Makes you feel good, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He said, "You know, when we chose this location for you, we put together all the things you wanted and got the one location that probably suited you the best." And it looks out over English Bay, right? So it is really beautiful. But that's an example of corroborating evidential information, you know, that
things
really happen.
Yeah, we doubt when spirit, maybe especially early on, you know, when things happen. And I guess I'm trying to look at this from a perspective. You know, I think a lot of people that listen to this program are people that are just kind of on the outside looking in a little bit. You know, the people that already believed, and I don't do shows for them because they already believe. You know, it's like this is for people. I always approach it from, like, I would have been quite a while ago going, "Really? Is this for real?" And you mean, and there's so much more that we're going to get to with Steve, because as I started to read and on his different people, his guests that he's talked about and they've done shows with on the website, there's this thing called the Reval. And then we talk about, you know, I've talked about it on my program before, that there's ascension. And I've always kind of been not sure 100%, because some of my guests will say, and this is through channeling, some will say, "Well, no, there's going to be one Earth, and we're all going to move to that, and this is in the fifth dimension." Some say there'll be another place left behind where maybe those that don't want to go or not ready will stay, and it'll almost be like two different worlds. What is your take on the ascension?
Okay, well, first of all, first of all, it's a gradual thing, so the Earth could linger for those people who maybe they're staying with their husband and children, and they'll go after they die or something. It's possible that the Earth could maintain a presence for some a little while, but Gaia, who by the way is an archangel, has chosen to remove her presence from the third dimension after a period of time. So there will be no second Earth after some time. Ascension is a state of consciousness. It's not, how can I say it? It's not that it doesn't have an environment and a setting. Of course it does. We all grow up in environments and settings, whether they're the astral world or this world or whatever, or the 10th dimension or what have you. So really all we notice is that we feel much better and the Earth looks much, you know, brighter and everything's greener and what have you. But all of this is a state of consciousness. I mean, the Earth is a state of consciousness. The everything we see growing around us, a tree is a state of consciousness. It's consciousness organized. It's love organized, which is the same as consciousness. So we're just not accustomed to these ideas, so they feel strange to us. But the other side, they're very accustomed to all these ideas, and nothing about any of this is strange to them. You change your consciousness, you then bring into view another, how can I say it? Well, other people who are at that level of consciousness and the collective environment that we're all dreaming, which most of us come into, but then change in certain respects to suit ourselves. So there won't be a second Earth. That is my answer to that question. Ascension is gradual. If most people ascended, am I, by the way, TJ, am I shouting?
No, you're not. You're fine.
I'm not. Okay, because you know that I'm on my cell phone because my computer's in for repair.
That's fine.
Okay. So if most people were to ascend all at once, they go nuts. You know, they think they've lost their mind. Oh, it feels really good. But, oh, look, I'm not in tune with the people around me, and so I must be crazy. And, oh, look, they're putting me in an insane asylum because I'm talking about love all the time. If they didn't go nuts, they might drop dead from some condition because their bodies wouldn't be able to hold the energy. So it has to go about, for most people, slowly. And so, for instance, the next event in ascension will be a heart opening, and that is in effect fourth chakra enlightenment, which Hindus call spiritual awakening and Buddhists call stream entering. It's the first enlightenment experience. I think you've had that, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then we'll digest that experience. That experience will have us be able to feel the torrent of love that flows in the heart, which we can't feel so long as the heart aperture, which is called the hridayam, is closed. But with a heart opening, which can either be explosive or implosive or gradual,
okay.
With a heart opening, one is swept away by the tsunami of love. It fills everything. You're immersed in an ocean of love, and it's not just ordinary love. It's not just the love that we feel every day. The difference between that love, ordinary love, and higher dimensional love is like, as I was saying to you the other day, is like the difference between Tang and freshly squeezed orange juice from oranges right off the tree.
Yeah,
there's no comparison.
No.
And yeah, no comparison. Well, why don't you say a thing about that?
I used to, as a kid, my mom would get us Tang. Oh, look it, boys. We're going to get you some of this. The astronauts drank this. This is great. And my brother and I, my brother and I would be all excited, you know, oh, Tang, yeah, thanks, Mom. And then we drink it. It's like, can we get orange juice? It was like that with everything too. My mom, bless her soul. I mean, she grew up in Germany and lived actually underneath Hitler, and was only 14 when her mom died in 1944. So she had a different viewpoint. Everything to her was, you know, you didn't buy things that you didn't need. And she could see through advertising. She says, oh, she always got generic. So all these other kids might be drinking Coke or Pepsi, and we got Graffs soda, you know. Mom, this is a little flat. This is a little flat, Mom. But, you know, I cherish her because she taught me so much about not expecting to have more than I really need. And appreciating things.
Yeah, interesting. What insight? Go ahead.
No, but share your childhood. When did you have unusual things happen when you were a kid?
Boy, what an interesting question. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
The Arcturians once said to me in a reading, they said, you needed to go to the depths of, darkness. You needed to go to the depths of darkness so that you could find the way out and then tell other people about it. My dad was violent, and so I grew up in a childhood where I was constantly protective, you know, trying to stay away from his violence. And at age 7, he yelled at me from such a close quarter, like about 3-4 inches from my face, that I dissociated and stayed dissociated for about until I was 58.
Wow.
And, yeah, I could still function, but I wasn't on stable ground at any point. I didn't feel confident. I didn't feel secure. There was always something, I guess missing would be as good a word as any. So my life from that moment on became ascension. It became an ascent out of a difficulty about myself that I didn't really understand, right? And I didn't understand it till age 42 when a girlfriend that I was with said, do you know you have the profile of an abused child? And both sides of me came to the surface at the same time, right?
Mm.
And kind of looked at each other and said, who the hell are you?
Mm. Right.
And came together in a fashion. And from that point on, knowing that I had been dissociated and still was dissociated, the work became about whatever I needed to do to come back together again. And that happened at 58 with my brother's help. So I didn't have the kind of life where others visited me. I can tell you one incident that later I confirmed was Michael. And that's, actually, I probably shouldn't talk about that.
Really? Okay, that's okay.
It came to do with a friend offering me a very potent drug, right? Very potent drug. And I had one of them, and it was like nothing. And he gave me another, and I had another of them, nothing. I had 4 in total,
uh-oh,
and nothing happened. He was freaking out because it cost him a lot of money, right? I didn't know anything about anything, so I didn't even know what was supposed to happen, right? And years later, I asked Michael, were you involved in that some way? He said, oh, yes. He said, we weren't going to have you wander into that particular byway. So
that's interesting.
You know, so he has apparently been watching over many people, not just me, but to see that, you know, we reach maturity and we're able to contribute, so to speak. That's the only kind of, then there are things that happened when I got older, such as Shaktipat, which is the bestowal of energy upon a follower. So I had that with an Indian guru. And my hair stood on end. You know, I went into the kitchen. I said, boy, you'll never believe what just happened to me. And my girlfriend said, oh, I probably will. You look at yourself in the mirror. My hair was all standing on end.
Really?
So now those kinds of experiences just continued. I mean, I once wrote them all down. I think it was at 23, and that was way back in 1980, you know, something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they just continue to pace. But they're usually experiences in awareness.
Right.
And bliss and love, yes. Not like meeting a galactic or something.
And, you know, I think even those experiences, which I've had experience where I actually met what's called a gray, I think they're meant to wake you up. So if you see a ghost or if you, whatever, you know, it's to me, it's always been like, okay, what else is there out there? And now you believe this, what else are you going to believe? So to me, it was like laid out for me to take me, so I would take steps, and I assume for many others. When we reach, when we become these beings that transition into the fifth dimension, when we ascend, you've talked about this before, or at least others have talked about this. What do you think will become of us? What is, because I've heard many, many very positive things that are said with ascension. And do you have a take on that?
Well, given that we're the first in the universe to participate in this kind of ascension, taking our bodies with us, everybody ascending rather than, say, just Jesus ascending. Excuse me. Just Jesus ascending into the sky, I think our role is going to be a teaching role in the universe. We probably will, people, you know, not everybody, but some people will probably go to other planets, other star systems, galaxies, whatever, and talk about our experience here, what worked, what didn't work. Certainly we'll be talking about the weight. But that might not be something that other people have to encounter because of what we learn here. This is a trial. In fact, Michael has described it to me as a test run. And he's told me furthermore that after this particular go-round, I have a 200-year vacation. And then we do it all again on the seventh dimension.
Well, at least you got 200 years, you know. Maybe
maybe
you can go to the Caribbean or something for, you know, for a little bit, or who knows what.
You bet I will.
So, but our physical bodies become lighter, from what I understand. More, what do they call it, crystalline?
Yes.
And our bodies no longer age, according to what I've read. And it just makes sense to me, because I think once you ascend, if you ascend, you won't have... None of the things that concern us now will concern us.
No, that's right.
Food,
yes.
If we choose to eat, I would believe we could manifest in a moment. All these things that we're capable of doing are very difficult to do in the third dimension. You have to be a very enlightened soul, like Jesus was, I think, to manifest food and pull it out of a basket, or to be able to walk on water. All of us are capable, and he even said that you could do that, but very few of us understood how to do that. So now all of us, from what I understand, will understand how.
Right. Just before we go into that, remind me to mention fruits on trees, etc. Before we go into that, though, oh boy, I hope I don't forget what I was about to say. I did.
That's
See,
okay.
Even a little lead-in, okay. I forget what I was going to say. It'll come back. But I was going to say that fruit grows on trees in the higher dimensions. People eat a fruit, and it restores them. Say some juice trickles down their chin. The juice just goes back into the atmosphere, so to speak. So they do grow foods. There are people who have even greener thumbs. And green crystalline thumbs, and they not only grow things, but they introduce the patterns for successful varieties into this plane of existence. This is the only plane of existence, by the way, that has death. And of course the death that it has is simply an exit from this dimension, the physical well, everything's physical. Shouldn't use that word for just this dimension, but they call it the physical dimension, to the astral world. So See, again, there we go, eh? Off into space. Where that thought
that's
went.
That's okay. That's okay. It was a nice trip. But, you've got 200 years.
Yeah,
you got 200 years. Nice keep trip, going.
Yeah, right. So people do eat there, and most of their eating is on ceremonial occasions. They, as far as I know, they don't have sex organs. They do. They procreate, but not in the same way we do. For instance, I don't think the baby has to go through the mother's body. And those, you know, the birth of a child, the child has very carefully chosen the parents. They've all agreed on the experiences the child wants, and that's the reason for them incarnating. So, but it's... Yeah, it's all run by the power of thought. So is this dimension, but it's just sluggish.
Right. It
like
doesn't
molasses.
Happen. It doesn't happen as quickly.
Yeah.
It speeds up a lot quicker.
I got that thought again.
Go ahead.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah, go ahead.
Before I forget it.
Yes.
I don't think we fully realize the power of our beliefs. I really don't. I think we glibly say things, oh, yes, that's our belief system. I've had several experiences lately, or that's the last year, that show me that a lot of what I think I'm seeing and feeling and everything else is there simply because I believe it's there. And the minute I drop my belief, well, maybe going a bit far to say the minute I drop my belief, it disappears. I'm thinking particularly of emotions.
Hmm.
I had an experience of shame a while back, I forget why, and I said, well, I'm going to get into this, I'm going to experience it through to completion, see what this is all about, and no sooner than I opened to the experience of shame did it disappear. It's like it had no objective reality.
Hmm.
I just thought it did. I believed it did, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the minute I tried to experience it, it wasn't there. And I've had that happen with worry. I've had that happen with fear. What I'm saying is that we are looking out there on a third, fourth dimensional world, but it may just be that we're already in a fifth dimensional world and we just haven't pierced through the veil of our beliefs.
Wow. That's interesting.
And yeah, and I think we're going to find that that's a process that goes on from now till forever, until we're ascended, that is, we're going to have to catch up with what the world has already done, and we believe it's otherwise, and because we believe it's otherwise, it shows up for us that way.
That's interesting.
So it's a very subtle process,
mm-hmm.
very subtle. And they're talking about it all the time, but we don't get it. Like, we don't have experiences which show us what they're talking about. But I think a lot of what we see outside, if I don't mean people and cars and trees and that, but, oh, I'm not quite sure what I mean, but there's some of it or all of it or a lot of it or whatever that only exists in our beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'll be writing about that as soon as I know more about it.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. And actually, my friend was talking about that with me. And she kind of said, you know, TJ, you're already there and you just don't realize it. Cause I said, well, what's the sense I'm always curious and I'm thinking, well, what's it going to be like? Am I going to like all of a sudden feel different that I'm going to be more aware of everything? And then I can create just anything I want spontaneously. But we're already transitioning right now to begin with, aren't we? That's what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, how can I say this? What we're going to find, I visited the other dimensions. Michael said to me I could visit but not stay. And the fifth dimension is tremendously blissful and loving. And we go in and out of bliss here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every time we go in and out of bliss, we're going in and out of the fifth dimension. The heart opening that I had, the torrent or tsunami of love that I was in after that experience is no different than the tsunami of love on the fifth dimension. It's just that my heart refused to stay open. It stayed open for about 6 months. And as I mentioned to you on the phone the other day, it then became bliss. And that lasted for 3 months. And then it gradually shut down. On the fifth dimension, our hearts will remain open. Mm-hmm. That's the big difference, right? We will be permanently immersed in an ocean of love, which is just what the sages have said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, I have to talk about enlightenment for a sec. Is that okay?
Sure. Whatever you want to say, go ahead.
Okay. I have this idea about enlightenment that you had one experience, then you had a different experience, and you have a different experience and a different experience. And now I change my view on that. I don't see it that way any longer. I see it as a person choosing an area in which they want to have an experience. Or, you know, their guides may choose it for them. I think I would have chosen awareness, but I think my guides chose love because it was more useful, you know, for me to be writing on love. And the experience, the deep experience of love that I had on that occasion, I don't think is any different. And as a matter of fact, Michael has told me that it was a seventh dimensional experience. So I know it's not any different than the experience we'll have on the fifth dimension. It just gets deeper. It's permanent with mm-hmm. ascension.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to change my views on ascension. I've also had an experience of seventh chakra enlightenment, Brahmayana, but it was toned down. I also had an experience of seventh dimensional just beingness, and it was also toned down. And what I mean by that, and I checked this out with Michael, and he said, oh, yes, no, we don't want you flying off somewhere. So, yes, we toned it down, we truncated it. I had an experience of my seventh dimensional self, the Oversoul, and there was no bliss. Hmm. How can you have an experience of the seventh dimensional Oversoul and there's no bliss?
Hmm.
It didn't make any sense to me at all. I had an experience of the Kundalini going right up my spine to the crown chakra and uniting there with the crown chakra, and there was no bliss. It's like, what's going on here? And again, Michael says, if you go too far ahead, first of all, you'll be out of touch with your readers. You won't want to serve in that capacity. You and I won't be building a forum, a platform. So you can do that if you want. You know, if you want to ascend now, I will sit beside you and I will help you accomplish that task. But it's not what you signed on for.
Mm-hmm. So they're only letting you have so much. It's like we're going to dangle the carrot, and you're going to get to taste the carrot. But if you got too much of the carrot, you'd want to go eat it, and you wouldn't stay over here. You'd be eating the carrot over
at
the
right.
other. So you made a choice to stay here to help others, like I think many people have. And do you believe then, so then we're all kind of going to either ascend together, or if you choose not to, then some of those people, they may leave their physical vessel.
Well, they're leaving their physical vessels right now.
Yeah.
I mean, surely people have noticed the number of people who are dropping all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Some well-known celebrities as well.
Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're not ascending.
Okay.
They could ascend in their death, just like Jesus did, or they could ascend from the other side, from the astral world.
Mm-hmm.
So one can't, just because they left, You can't jump from there and say they're not ascending.
We don't know what their choices are. Some of them may, and some of them may not. Some of them may, some of them. Some of them might want to go back to another world where they can experience exactly. You and I were talking about this too, because I think there's got to be a place if people want to continue to hang on to this, which I don't know why, but if they wanted to hang on to this, there's going to be a place, I would assume there are places in the universe where they can go and experience duality, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Separation.
Yeah, I'm not sure why a person would make that choice. if they have had any kind of experience of bliss or love or what have you.
Well, I look at it from the perception of, like, Neil Donald Walsh in Conversations with God, and others have talked about this, that we really came on this journey so we could forget what God was, because the joy would be to rediscover it. You know, you don't know what God is without the absence of God. You don't know what light is without darkness. So part of this journey, I feel, always have felt, is that we came here just so we could, hey, we're beings that love to explore and try new things. And so we said, you know, I wonder what it'd be like to totally forget what God is and then try to find him and be so lost. And so, ta-da, here we go. We got our wish. And, you know, there's a great joy in finding, rediscovering that, which is kind of what we're doing now anyway.
Yeah, blind man's buff. It's always so much fun when you pin the tail on the donkey or something, you can take off your veil.
Yeah, the veil is lifted. Oh. So that makes a little bit of sense to me why some might want to do that. And I don't think everybody, you know, all the souls that are created, they don't all come into a physical existence. So they may wait a billion years and go, you know, I've been hearing about that physical thing down there. These people, these souls are still talking about it. Maybe I'm going to give it a try, you know? I'm going to go see if I can try that. So not everybody comes maybe at the same time. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, also, you know, I've been healing my own negative patterns, and the strangest thing is that some of them are so pleasant. Hmm. You know, like anger is so pleasant, and jealous, well, not jealousy, but lust feels so good, you know, and greed, you know, all mine. They actually feel good. And, you know, I used to ask myself all the time, why is it so hard to do the right thing? And it's because doing the wrong thing feels so good. You know, you steal something, it's like, wow, look what I got. And you boast about it to your friends, look what I got. So these people, some of them anyways, are, and there's going to be a whole spectrum, but some of them just simply enjoy those kinds of denser feelings, like lust and greed and... I certainly did. I noticed that one of the reasons it was so hard to stop eating things that weren't good for me or drinking things that weren't good for me or whatever was I was just enjoying it so much, just always driven by my pleasure seeking. So I think that's what's happening with them.
Yeah, we have to. It's there's a lot of things that are hard to let go of here. But, I mean, they are, in a way, it's just an illusion. And ultimately... you're going to let go of them anyway. So let's talk about the reval, because I've seen you mention that more than once. What is what is the thought behind that? What is supposed to be going on with that?
Sure. Well, first of all, we need to remember that, just as you said, on the fifth dimension, you can create whatever you want. So money is only a transitional device and something we like. You know, I like money.
Sure.
And so so they use money as a transitional device to get us to, in the frame of mind, where we're willing to accept abundance on the higher dimensions and all that. It's like, what was that thing we used to do in kindergarten? Finger painting. Mm. You know, finger painting was a way of getting us oriented towards art, right? You just ran your fingers all over the board with this mush in it and created something, right? Where the reval fits in is that light workers are being given first chance to rebuild Nova Earth. Like, they're being given a period of time in which they will have the money to do it, and the opportunity and help from the galactics and from the celestials and from everyone to create a new world structure, a new way of doing things, new way of being. It won't feature the kinds of dualistic, polarized ways of being that existed in the third. And the way they're doing it is by a simple mechanism of changing the value of certain currencies, adjusting the value, plus putting everything on a gold standard. And this has happened before. Kuwait revalued its currency. I don't think many people believe that it was happening, but the people who did made a fortune. And who had insider trading information, so to speak. And now we all have insider trading information on the fact that certain currencies are revaluing. And I like to think it's going to happen soon, but I've been waiting an awful long time for this to happen, and others have waited longer. What is going to happen is that a number of currencies are going to go up in value, and that implies that other currencies will go down in value relatively. I'm the only currency I'm going to mention, I'm not going to mention one currency because you can't buy it anywhere, so it'll just be frustrating for people. That's you know which currency that is. But a currency that, as far as I know, hasn't been, there's been no hold placed on it, is the Vietnamese dong. And that you can get by simply going to a currency exchange at the airport or your bank and just ordering some Vietnamese dong. That is not the highest yielding currency, but the highest yielding currency you can't buy anymore. So, but the Vietnamese dong you can not only buy, but because it's an existing currency and the other currency is not, it's more of a bond than a currency. It won't be existing in the future, but the Vietnamese dong will go forward. That means that if you bought $100 worth of dong, and you said, oh, I don't want to be in this, you could take it to the currency exchange window and get $95 for it. So that's why I recommend the dong. And the dong should go up many times in value. We're talking about, say, a 500,000 dong note being worth, maybe $250,000, something like that.
And how do you know this all, Steve?
Oh, how did I learn about the reval? Well, I was introduced to the reval in 2011 by Sanat Kamara. He told us that he wanted a group of us to handle a fund for light workers, whose money was going to come from pre-Nessera funds. Well, these are the pre-Nessera funds. These, in fact, are, the reval is pre-Nessera funds. And we've been waiting since then. So that's how I heard about it.
And who was Sanat? Could you tell people who
it is? Sure. Sanat Kamara is our planetary, the position's called Logos. It simply means the person responsible for planet Earth, for reporting to the higher universal councils, etc. And I can't remember why this group of us had the reading. We knew to have the reading, so somebody, Linda or somebody, told us to have the reading. It didn't cost anything. And Sanat there, revealed this piece of work he wanted us to do. All the other people in the group were Nessera custodians, right?
And when you use the
I
term...
I alone...
Go ahead.
Oh, Nessera.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to define that too.
National Economic Security and Reformation Act. It's an act of the American Congress that wasn't read into the order paper, wasn't read into law, but was passed by a rump of the American Congress, the only uncorrupted members. And it mandates debt forgiveness, abundance for people. It has so many, all governments are required to step down upon the proclamation of Nessera, and new elections are to be held. We're switching from admiralty law to common law. It goes on and on and on. So fixing all the abuses. And now, where was I going with that?
I'm sorry. I forgot like you did.
I'm asking you.
I know. What? I was more excited to hear about Nessera, and then I forgot where you're going originally with it. I'm sorry, Steve. You were talking about what was going to happen with the reval and the Nessera, and I asked you how you knew about these funds being...
Pre-Nessera funds, yeah. Yes. Okay, pre-Nessera funds. So you know, this was being brooded about even in 2011 and much soon, much before that, with the farm claims. In fact, this movement towards abundance has morphed and changed and been added on to. It started out as the farm claims, where farmers were saying they were cheated out of something. I don't remember now what the issue was. The American government was involved in somehow doing bad things to farmers, and they sued and they won. And a settlement was mandated, and then that somehow never reached the farmers. But that was the seed, that was the nucleus, and then it became a fund to give abundance to veterans because they had fought for their country and some of them been maimed and all kinds of things. And so they were going to be recognized by a fund. And then it grew, I forget what came after that, but it finally grew into a currency revaluation. And Michael said to me the other day, I said, well, what happens if it doesn't happen? He said, we have other ways of getting around this. This is not, you know, if it didn't work, St. Germain's World Trust could cover everything that the reval would cover. And the Galactics have off-planet gold. So, you know, we're not limited to the reval. Anyways, but I do actually think it is now really, really near, you know, like any time now, given all the indications, which there have never been this many indications that it was so close.
When you say indications, what do you mean? How do you know there? I mean, there are these channeled beings talking about it, or is there actual physical signs that you're hearing from people you know, or anything to that effect?
Well, there are physical signs. For instance, Kim Jong Un, and Trump and Donald Trump have signed. Well, they haven't. They've met and they've signed some accords, but it certainly means that the bad stuff between the predominant trouble spot at the moment with the so-called communist side of things, one of the major trouble spots for the capitalists. If I'm going to say communist, then the other side would be capitalist. They signed a treaty of some sort or an accord. That was a big thing. The only other spot that's still troublesome, and there has to be peace in the world before there's Nesra. The only other trouble spot is the Middle East. So we're getting down, and I'm talking now about Nesra. I'm not talking about the reval. There doesn't have to be peace in the world for the reval. Oh, wait a minute. Now, I did say that these were events that reflected upon the reval. See, I have some short-term memory. And yes, they have been said to be important for the reval. Not peace in the world, but peace between North Korea and the United States has been said to be important for the reval. We have the new SIPS banking system that the Russians and Chinese have devised without any Trojans in it, I'm sure. And that will get around the SWIFT system, which is the cabal's system, which has been open to all manner of corruption. The software for the reval is in place. It's all been tested out. It's running fine. There are all these indications that we're ready to go. And then there's also things that Michael said. He said to me the other day in my last reading, we're on the precipice. You're right at the precipice with the reval. And others, I had another person report a reading in which somebody, his guide said that they expected any day. So I think we really are real close. So if your listeners are saying, oh boy, I want to be a part of that, just go to your bank, ask them to buy any amount of Vietnamese dong you want. Don't forget, you'll be able to cash it in later if you don't like it, so you're not going to lose money. And just keep that. Go to Dinar Chronicles, D-I-N-A-R, Dinar Chronicles. They will have the 800 number. GoldenAgeOfGaia.com will have the 800 numbers. And you'll phone them. You'll make an appointment. You'll bring your currency, your passport, etc. You'll put it before them. They will give you a bunch of digits on a computer screen saying you're wealthy, and you will be. But this is not being done just for you to be wealthy. This is not being done so people can buy a chateau in the south of France. This is being done so we can rebuild or build Nova Earth, the new Earth, so that we can relieve homelessness, relieve poverty, get rid of these man-made, cabal-made diseases like Ebola and AIDS, which came out of either the CDC in Washington or Fort Detrick. Hmm. They've been manufactured. Mm-hmm. And they already have the cures. You know, they
right.
Because they're not going to set a disease like that loose in the world without having the cure for themselves and their, you know, their dependents and what have you, and their friends. And
you know, I think was it on your site? Maybe I read that somewhere that, you know, they've been trying to eliminate the human race. And
yes,
there have been those, you know, and every year, think about it, we have a new thing that comes out. And every year,
yeah,
it seems to fade away without much fanfare after big hype. And then it's like something stops it. And I think it was on your site in one of the different articles talked about how there are beings, they now have permission to step in. They now have the ability to step in, and they will not allow us to be destroyed through nuclear war. They will not allow us to be destroyed through vaccination, or not vaccinated, but through diseases that could wipe out humanity.
It's not going to happen.
That's part of what's going on. And every year they warn us, well, we've got there's this latest flu, you better come get a vaccination. And it's like, and then, a few people, a few lives are claimed, but then you find out it's not as big of a deal as it was. And so,
that's not quite what I changed in the way you said it's not quite a big deal as it once was. The Galactic step in, they neutralize the vaccines, they neutralize the chemtrail.
Okay.
They neutralize the radiation in the ocean from all the cans of radiation we dumped overboard. Who do you think took care of the Gulf of Mexico oil spill?
Yeah, that's
why are we still hearing about that?
Mm-hmm.
No, they did. The Galactics took care of that. But if the Galactics hadn't taken care of that, surely we'd be living in an ocean of oil by now.
I would think so.
It would just, So it wasn't BP or whatever that addressed that. It was the Galactics. So the Galactics have fixed all the threats against society. Let me just backtrack and tell your listeners what we're talking about here. The cabal, the Illuminati, the deep state, shadow state, secret government, whatever you want to call them, plan to kill off all but 500,000 people whom they would use as slaves. One of the plans they had to do this was very simple: nuclear war. And they would exist. I just got an incoming call, and I'm not taking it, but I had to figure out how not to take it.
Hmm.
So they would eliminate all but 500,000 who would be their slaves, and they would exist in deep underground military bunkers. Now, those deep underground military bunkers have been taken out. All the booms and, that's not true. Not all the booms are deep underground military bunkers being taken out. Some of the booms are just the Galactics making a noise to say, we're here, wake up.
Mm.
I don't, now remind me that I was going to tell you about what the Illuminati were doing with the population, okay? Because I'm going to say something else here for a sec.
Okay.
There's an Arcturian light ship that sits in the western sky every evening. If you look at sunset, And you can't see another star or anything else because it's so bright, you can still see that Arcturian light ship. I don't think it's exactly geosynchronous because it tends to move down the western sky and finally disappears. But you can see it from about, well, in Vancouver you can see it from about, 6:30, 7 o'clock on. Sorry, my iPhone is giving me commands here. So if anybody doubts that they're here, you know, all they have to do is see this brilliant.
Are you able to see that? Would you be able to see that as far away as where I'm at, you think, then, or what?
Well, it's thousands of miles away.
Oh, okay. So it's up high enough to where anybody can really see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I asked Anak Mara about it, and I asked Michael about it, and both of them say it's an Arcturian light ship. It's here to show the flag, wake people up. It's always, not always there, but it's there every night. And nobody's talking about it.
Mm.
No astronomer is saying, what's this?
Right.
No government agency tasked with saving us from asteroids hitting the planet is saying, you know, there's something just sitting above the planet. It's amazing, you know, when you think about it. Anyways, coming back to the Illuminati, they're just simply power hungry. You know, they are an elite who's figured out how to do this, you know, be masters of the universe, as one military command calls itself. And they do it by subverting the justice system. They do it by corrupting companies and corrupting banks. They do it by mind control. Some of the things they do it by, your listeners are not going to be happy hearing about, like pedophilia, Satan worshiping, things like that, and child sacrifice. They only have to go online to read all about that if they want to. It's really tough to get through that stuff.
Right.
But this is what, and the Illuminati, they did subvert the military. I don't think the military is subverted any longer. But there's been an alliance of people who come together, sometimes they're called white hats, whatever, to overthrow the Illuminati. And they have galactic support. So the Galactics, for instance, when the Illuminati think it's time to start World War III, like when Donald Trump is on Air Force One coming back from Singapore, they launch a missile, you know, to blow up the president's plane and start World War III. And the Galactics intercept the missile, take it out.
What happened in Hawaii.
Yes, exactly, yes. I have to say that I really think if we look at it closer, we'll find that Hawaii was a false flag. Nothing was actually launched.
Okay.
What Hawaii was all about was to give the White Hats an opportunity to download some information on the NSA computers. Now, anything I say may be slightly wrong. You know, like maybe it wasn't NSA, it was CIA. No, it was NSA, but what I'm saying is I'm doing all of this by memory. But there's a protocol with the NSA computers in Hawaii. If there's an incoming nuclear missile, it triggers an automatic disk download to San Francisco of all their records, right? Well, the NSA in Hawaii had refused to let the White Hats have access to their computers and their records and what have you. And when this false flag happened, which was a White Hat false flag, their systems automatically downloaded all the records to San Francisco.
Okay.
So that's what that was all about.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. Because I'd read an article that they said that they were trying to start, somebody was trying to start World War III, and that had...
Yeah.
And they were trying to attack Hawaii, and it was shot down. But you're saying that's not accurate.
No, that was the cover story.
Okay.
That's what was, but I don't know how, it had to be convincing because otherwise the NSA would not have pulled the switch and downloaded all their, they don't need to pull a switch, but somebody would have had to make the assessment that we're in terminal difficulty here and we need to download the records. So it had to be a convincing cover story. But the everyone, you know, the celestials, the galactics, everybody responsible for the divine plan for our ascension has said there will be no nuclear war on planet Earth, number one, and it's going to end happily, you know, not like Atlantis, not like Lemuria, not like some other planets in the galaxy that haven't made it, you know. The cabals in their areas have blown up the planet. Mardek was blown up and formed our asteroid belt, so it has happened even in our solar system. So, but the white hats and behind them the Divine Mother and the Divine Plan have said we will ascend this time, mass, and so the cabal, it's as if it's still sluggish for the cabal, but for the rest of us, it's far less dense. They won't even be able to reach us in a short amount of time. Our vibrations will be so much higher than theirs that it just won't be possible for them to impact us. If a fifth-dimensional being came down here right now, I wouldn't be able to impact him or her. So it's much the same. So, yeah, no, the cabal did plan to kill all but 500,000 people on the planet. You can read the Georgia guidelines. They talk about the 500,000. It's right there in stone, written in stone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope that doesn't dismay too many of your listeners.
No. I don't go down this road too often, but I think it's good to hear that. And I've even mentioned before that I felt that the nuclear war has somebody stepping in, and you can just go back to the 60s and 70s at these missile base sites where people that have worked at these sites saw UFOs, and it shut down everything at these sites. And so you know that there's some accuracy in that statement that somebody of a higher power. And then I've interviewed friends of mine who have studied UFO cases, and a good one that comes to mind is the Flatwoods Monster case, which took place in 1952, I believe.
Vaguely. Yeah,
and,
vaguely remember.
And my buddy Frank, he spent his lifetime, good part of his life, going through and getting all these witnesses. But he came to understand that there were four different ships that came over the eastern seaboard. So that meant four different races were here. And he also tied together that we were doing these military exercises, and they obviously thought maybe it was real. So they showed up for a reason, and they easily could have done anything they wanted to us. And we tried to take them down. And I think we even damaged some of maybe the more, you know, I'm sure all these ones that belong to the Galactic Federation, maybe their technology is different with each one of them. So we were actually able to damage like a couple of ships that had to land and repair. But I'm thinking the ones now that are out there, we couldn't do anything to them. It's like their technology is so much further ahead than ours.
Yeah. So one Galactic commentator, excuse me, Adamu, compared, oh, by the way, your listeners should know that we have several space fleets, actually, flying things like the TR-3B Aurora, which is ours, and goes to Mars regularly, where we have colonies, etc. see, there again, I forgot where I was going with that one. Isn't that funny?
You were going to tell us about, have a space fleet, but it's not probably in the same level as what...
No, Adamu called it party favors, tin hats and party favors or something, or tin cans and party favors. That's what he called our ships, which are capable of, you know, very fast travel and go to Mars regularly and the moon and what have you. There's both the... I can't remember now the name of one of the space fleets. Something like Space Monitor or something. Can't remember now. The other one's just called the Secret Space Fleet. But and they've been warring against each other too, as a matter of fact. in June 2008, I remember reading Rensa.com, and there was a Minuteman that was launched from Bozeman, Montana, and heading north towards Russia. And it never reached its target. Now, that's just the same as the missile that was launched just a few days ago, aimed at Donald Trump's plane. It never reached its target, right? What that means is they didn't see the Galactics take it out. But we have even videos of the Galactics taking things out. Remember Larry King's show, where the fellow who was responsible for space flights at Vandenberg saw through his camera lens a Galactic take the missile out. And that converted him. But in Bozeman, the missile went up in 2008, and that was it. Nobody knew what happened to it. But that was shot in hostile intent. And so the Galactics have been, you know, nabbing, catching our missiles for many decades, actually. Some decades, or turning them off in their silos that you were talking about. That's Captain Salas, right?
I don't remember the individual who came forward on that, but I know that they said the guy, there was a man from, they said it also happened in Russia with some other silos, so.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, no, getting the message across. Mm-hmm. We can do this.
Yeah, yeah. You guys really can't. And you can, you know, when I think Kim Jong-un was jumping up and down saying, we're going to fire these off. I'm thinking, did somebody come and tell him, no, you're not? Or did he finally come to the conclusion that, you know, he's not going to be able to do it?
Well, I think we're going to find out that the North Koreans have created the biggest bluff in history. I don't think they have nuclear weapons. The so-called nuclear test blast that we heard of a couple of years ago, Michael said to me that wasn't nuclear. It was just a huge amount of TNT.
Mm.
But it wasn't a nuclear blast. They're bluffing us.
Trying to get us to the bargaining table.
I guess. I don't know what they're trying to do. But anyways, I hope they succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like. But, you know, can I talk about another thing in regards to all this military bluff?
Sure.
The American military has been bluffing their superiority for at least a decade, if not longer. Let me just give you some notion, some statistics, some concepts, military concepts that show that the American military is not what we think it is, okay? One, the Russians created a cruise missile, I guess it was, called a Sunburn. It's got later versions. It is so fast, and at the end wobbles in such a way that it cannot be brought down by any weapon that the United States arsenal has had for the last 10 or 15 years. It's unstoppable and could take out any carrier. These things have all been depicted, by the way, in movies. Remember the carrier that was taken out in Some of All Fears?
No, I never saw that.
Well, that's a shot of the Sunburn missile taking out a carrier. So the carriers could all be taken out because China has the Sunburn, Iran has the Sunburn. The American carriers, etc., are always clustered over by Dubai, right?
Mm.
They don't want to go within range of these missiles.
Mm.
Now, that's one. Okay, here's another one. This is William Thomas talks about this. Some military types were testing some equipment, and it failed. And it failed on the truck that had the missile. It failed in the missile system. It failed in the radar. Three systems failed. Now, that's unusual. One would be an accident. Two would be coincidence. But three is sabotage, right?
Mm-hmm.
All at the same time. They went in, took the motherboards apart, made in China. They all had Trojans in them.
Hmm.
All the military hardware could have Trojans in it. All that's manufactured in China, that's for sure. So there's another, right? Now, here's another. Dick Cheney flew back from someplace like Jakarta, or who knows where he was going. And his plane developed all manner of trouble. And he had to land in Singapore. And when he landed in Singapore and got off the aircraft, the Chinese military attaché met him there, shook his hand, said, now here's what went wrong with your aircraft. This happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. So they brought his aircraft down, right? Here's another one. Here's another one. Remember Barksdale and the nuclear missiles being carried under the wing of a B-52 and being unaccounted for? They've been stolen. Well, the word was at the time that the Chinese had brought that plane down as well. I'm not quite sure that it was them. May not have been them. May have been the White Hats just saying the Chinese did it, or the Galactics. But in any case, the Chinese could turn off the American military or destroy it anytime they wanted. And that's been the situation for at least the past 10 years, probably longer. So, you know, it's all bluff. Like, American military are bluffing. North Korean military are bluffing. Everybody's bluffing, because where can you go past here? Nuclear war? Nobody wants it.
No, you can't do it anyway. And they probably know that, right?
Yeah. So, you know, so I don't think, you know, I think North Korea has just pulled out the biggest bluff in history. I really do. Yeah, we'll find out about it someday.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, there's so much going on, and there's so many things that we're not aware of, and we're heading into this time when the truth, really, we're heading into when the truth is coming out, aren't we?
Yes, we are, for sure, in a landslide. Can we talk about mission for a sec?
Sure. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Most people listening to your program either are now or will find themselves light workers in the future. They'll be working for the light, so to speak, for ascension, for disclosure, for abundance, for all these light-filled agendas. And as such, they will have agreed before they were born to a certain mission. I'll tell you what if they want to know what their mission is, the easiest way would be to see what it is you love doing. I love writing. You know, Michael said, let writing be the last thing that falls off your priority agenda. He didn't need to tell me that, because I just love writing. But my larger, I'll tell you what my larger mission is, in which writing fits. Writing is the way I do this. It's to participate in the deconstruction of the old order, in other words, the Illuminati. And of course, the blog was started as a cabal fighting blog. And then to participate in the construction of the new, of Nova Earth. So that is my mission, to help bring down the old, and deconstruct the old, and then construct the new. And probably, you know, if most of your listeners are not doing both, they probably are doing one or the other. So all the people going to jail, going on protest marches, raising awareness of what the Illuminati are doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they're all deconstructing the old. Mm-hmm. And then all the people participating in the reval and then saying, I'm going to end homelessness in my community. I'm going to end hunger in my community. I'm going to see that all single mothers have the money they need to raise their children in a decent lifestyle as they should be able to take care of seniors, to take care of the disabled. So that is building Nova Earth. And so people will find probably that their missions fit into, wow, at this time, because this is the time, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And ascension is building Nova Earth. Disclosure is building Nova Earth. The reval is accountability. So just a mention to your listeners, you're probably going to find yourself in one of those two camps, but the way you participate will bear a direct relationship to what you love.
And it's funny that you talk about that, because just recently, the last couple of days, a couple of people have come to me and said, you know, that they just feel they are meant to do something more, and they've gone in a direction that will be of service to others. So Bingo. Yes. You know, bingo. I think them, many of us feel that.
Yeah, we'll tell them to look at what it is that they bliss out doing. You know, it might be gardening. Who knows? Maybe they'll be responsible for new hydroponic agriculture or something. We don't know. But it will be in the area they love. The mother said on an hour with an angel at one point, she said, I didn't bring you here to have you labor in things that you don't like, that disgust you, that you're bored with. That wasn't the mission. So, you know, do what you love. That's the mission. So you know, you don't need to go to a medium and talk to Archangel Gabriel and say, what is my mission? You just need to identify what you love to do and then do it.
And then do it. And then in some way, down the road, it may not appear that way, but maybe in some cases down the road, it certainly will be beneficial, especially, you know, if you're doing it out of love, if you're doing it from a loving place.
Yes.
Then it will come from as a way of serving. Is there anything else you want to tell me? Because, I mean, we can keep going, but normally my show goes about an hour. We've gone an hour and 25. But, hey, you know, I don't care. There's nobody saying, you have to stop now. But we can do more than one show. But I'm finding it fascinating, the things you're talking about. A lot of those things I have not really delved into on my show because I've always tried to keep it more towards, you know, feeling good and positive. But there are some things you need to cover. You know, because I know whatever we focus on is what we get more of. You believe that as well, Steve, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of stay away from the things that I think that are a little more darker, if you will. But I'm glad you brought those up.
Yeah. We can afford to stay away from them. They're being handled.
Yeah.
You know, there are light workers whose mission it is to handle that. And so, you know, people at large don't need to. They can concentrate on their ascension and or their abundance or whatever, and know that the other situation will be corrected. It's not going to be allowed to continue. But is there anything I want to say in closing? Yes. Yeah.
Okay, good.
One word, love. One word. That is what it's all about. But the ordinary love we feel is not the love I'm talking about. I'm talking about a higher dimensional love that is soon going to be available to all of us. All of us who are open to it, that is the most important thing, to run into the lake of love, to jump into the lake of love, to get pushed into the lake of love, but just get in it. So.
And it's like, and we're really not going to be able to avoid it anyway, right? It's going to be around us.
We would avoid it, but then we wouldn't ascend if we avoided love. That's definitely a recipe for sticking in the third dimension.
So the opportunity is there. And when you say jump into love, what is it you feel that people can do to
jump into the lake of love? Well, I bring love up from my heart on the in-breath, and I send it out to the world on the out-breath. Love has to flow. Love does not stand still. It can't be saved. It can't be contained. It has to flow. So it's going to flow through us, and we're going to experience it as it does flow through us. So I take an in-breath, and as I'm doing that, I'm picturing myself drawing up a bucket of love from my heart or sucking it up with a cosmic vacuum cleaner, whatever, bringing love up from my heart. I experience it as it goes through me. I send it out to the world. So I'm providing a pipeline for it to flow through me, and I'm serving the world by sending love out to it. So I heartily recommend that simple breathing exercise to start to prime the pump, is what Michael said. When I had my heart open, he said, well, you prime the pump with your exercise and bringing up love from your heart. So it does work.
And that is a simple thing that everybody can do and doesn't cost them anything. And I think that's a good way to end this. And also, like with me, because I've had that experience like you of experiencing that tsunami of what you call the tsunami of love, that nirvana, whatever you want to call it. All I have to do is go back and remember it and feel that joy.
Yeah.
And that fills my soul, and then I just project it. And if people haven't felt it, like you said, I agree with you 100%. We think relationship love is the same thing, whether it's mother, child, father, child, or loved one, spouse, and I'm saying, and you're saying, if I'm correct, that it pales it details.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is the love of the universe, and it's a wave that when it hit me, I didn't want it to end. You just
yeah,
want
right.
to be enveloped in this love, and it tells me that we don't quite, maybe most of us don't quite understand that, but we will if we keep
no.
it in our heart.
Well, we haven't had any experience of it, so no, why would we understand it?
Don't remember. We have that experience. We just don't remember how many eons ago we felt that. Or sometimes when you're between lives, I'm sure when you're between lives, you must feel that somewhat, right?
Yes.
Before
yes,
you come
yes,
back.
You do.
Down. So.
Well, on the astral planes and the mental plane, which is the fifth dimension. Yes, you experience it.
So,
yeah.
It's there. We come here and we forget.
Yeah.
Boy, what a.
There, we ended on a happy note.
Yes. Thank you very much for being a part of this, Steve. I hope we can chat again soon. I really enjoyed this.
Yes, me too, TJ. Thank you.